Welcome back to Legal Moves. I'm here with the second part of my interview with Shannon Berzelius, Albert Kong, and Katsu. We've been talking about reality-based games or real games and parkour games, all kinds of different games that are sort of non-traditional in the games industry. Last time we discussed a lot of the development issues and the how and what of the industry. But in this episode, I'd like to talk more about the business and the legal issues. As far as business issues go, so most of the guests I have on, they have products like board games and video games that can be sold anywhere. Is there any issue that you have with having a product that's very location specific? I know in the last episode, Albert, we talked about you moving the horizontal parkour game from festival to festival and having to sort of pack it up. But, you know, when you have an escape room that's just in one room, or you have a Jericho event that's only in San Francisco, is that a big limitation?
I've run a couple other events and a couple games that are very location specific. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, you know, when you do create for try to run the game in a different space, you do have to, you know, redesign a lot of what you're doing. You have to go in, like Shannon was saying earlier, or last episode, to go in and kind of look at this terrain you have and the space you have and make your level designs again. So there is a part of it that's, you know, a redesign, but it's on the level of, you know, making of a level editor, I suppose, if you want to make analogies to the video games.
Okay. Shannon, do you you only do it in San Francisco? You said you've done a couple events outside of the city, but do you have anything to say about that?
I mean, we definitely don't work on the same scale as an app or digital content. So, mm-hmm. We have analog content. everything we do, if we want to do it in a different city, it is literally, having somebody go to that city and, sort of be the boots on the ground and, mm-hmm. look at everything. So we've done stuff in, we've done stuff all over the Bay Area. And so if somebody says, hey, we'd like to do something in Oakland, the first thing we're going to do is, like I said, go to the map, kind of look at, can you even do this in Oakland? And then we'll visit there and see what, we have to work with, because, we sort of are, like Albert said, we're looking at what kind of assets are here that we can incorporate into our game. So it is always sort of it's handcrafting every single thing. We can't just necessarily copy and paste, and make it work in a different location, because we want to make sure that it, actually fits with what that location has. So,
But I think that's,
and there's all kinds of past factors there.
It's good because it's less of a disposable experience. Like if you buy a game, okay, maybe you play it once, maybe you don't care. But if it's something, it's a real experience for people. And I think that makes it more special that you have to travel to this place and experience something either in the room or in the city. I think that's it makes it very special.
And
I think,
yeah. And, that's and we, awesome. Yeah. Cause I don't think, we just don't have we can't scale up what we have, we'd never be able to sell a million copies at a buck or 99 cents each.
Right.
So we're looking at, having, the cost for what people are paying, be what they would, I'd pay, that X amount of money for doing a real escape game or a Jericho game. Yeah. Like that was totally worth it. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I've heard people talk about, how they, bought a scavenger hunt online and basically they just were, emailed a PDF that you printed out and then you give it to your office. And mm-hmm. then, nothing is kind of sort of made for you. Nothing is, customized for you or your team or anything, even where you live, sometimes, it's just whoa, you wasted all that money on something that somebody tried to scale up, to sell to the entire world, and it turns out it just doesn't work.
Well, you do, how much of your business is corporate focused versus consumer facing? Meaning corporate clients. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we definitely do corporate clients or private games. That's probably It's funny, this year it's different than it has been. It's probably only been like 30% of what we do.
Okay.
In the four previous years that we've been doing this, I think this year it's closer to 60. It maybe has sort of started to eclipse the public games that we do on the weekends. Mm-hmm. I don't even know why, but we're sort of starting to get, word of mouth about that. But so, and every one of those that we do for corporate, we call it a private game. Private games, we do tailor those to the company, as far as like where we do it and if they want to, in different part of the city or whatever. So
I can imagine it happening like on the Google campus, right? There, you have to set it up in there or something.
Is
that kind of thing happening like through the company's office building or anything like that?
The closest we usually get is we do call this an urban game. So it's not necessarily something that we would do inside a building.
Right.
But, we start in boardrooms all the time. And so, the added benefit of, like one time we started at a company where, we're on the 13th floor and, a couple guys in one team decided they were, let's just take the stairwell down, completely come out on a different side of the building. Nobody will be looking for us. We can escape, and get to where we need to go. Mm-hmm. And they got lost because they had never been down the stairs before. And so that was their own. That's as close as we get to like sort of, people sort of doing it inside a building. But
okay. It's
funny because we always tell them, hey, you can't die on the block you start on anyway. So they were just really into
zone.
It. Yeah, exactly.
Albert and Kazu, do you mostly work with the public or do you have corporate clients that come in and want to do special games for them?
Yeah. Our main target is consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always run public events, public games. But of course, many corporate companies come to play our game. So especially in San Francisco, there are many IT companies. So like Google, Twitter, Facebook, those companies come to play our game every week.
Cool.
We try to keep most of our spots available for the public.
Yeah.
Right. And so if a company wants to come in, we might we'll ask them if they can buy a public slot, which are usually like after hours. But we also offer private slots for if they need to have like a specific time.
Well, if it's a big company, what is the room limit? I mean, the ones I've seen are like 8 people to a room. Do you have bigger versions or do they just sort of stack them back to back or do you have both rooms going at the same time? How does that work?
Yeah, good question. So actually both. We have 2 rooms in San Francisco. So that's why total capacity would be around 20 something. And then if they have like 20 people, they can play the game at the same times, 2 games. And also so this is our uniqueness. So we also run the escape theme event. It's not a small room. We can accommodate over 100 people at the same time.
Wow.
So, yeah, actually, last week we had a company event, and we had 200 people play at the same time. Yeah.
How does that work? Are they all in one big room together, or do they break up into groups and they have to work through it that way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are events where we have a large venue that we'll rent out, mm-hmm. and then players play in groups of 6. And so it's a little less physical in these ways, but it's still got the air of the live performance and the live event. Mm-hmm. So in these cases, there will be clues kind of and hints and puzzles and stuff kind of around the space. And there may be a little bit of physical interaction. There might be like another room that you need to get a password for.
Right.
But it's a little bit closer to the traditional puzzle hunt.
Okay. Yeah, I remember back in the 90s, I did one of those murder mystery cruises where it was for our company. And, I didn't
that's
come
classic.
Near solving it. But, that's sort of the seeds of this same kind of audience participation. You are the game or you're living the game. I think that stuff is cool. Kazu, how different or are there any major differences between the way that these things are run here versus in Japan, how they were traditionally run maybe over there?
American people get excited more than
Okay. Which I really like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, people are quite polite and a little bit quiet.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a big difference, I think.
Yeah, I lived there for 3 months at the end of last year and in the beginning of this year. And yeah, I did notice that. It's
okay.
People are much less likely to get very excited about things, at least in my experience. So we are more boisterous here, I guess, just sort of, yeah, excitable. I know definitely we were screaming and going crazy with my family when we were in the escape room. It's fun. Okay.
I really like it. Because I can get feedback. Oh, people are
exactly. Excited. You see where everything is the most thrilling, right?
Yeah.
It's a small industry, so I'm not sure how. Like, you know, I haven't really like compared all the patterns. I've played a bunch of them though, and from looking at the differences between the games that we have at Scrap, which are which many of them are localized from original Japanese games.
Okay.
From looking at those, we tend to be a little bit more more puzzle heavy, more cerebral perhaps. And I've seen a lot of American games. They look like, or the ones that are developed here, they're a little bit more cinematic, okay. And a little bit more about like this like feeling. Like the space is kind of is stronger. I mean, I think there's a sense that theme and environment is super important in all cases.
Yeah.
But we have a little bit more more of the cerebral side of the puzzles.
Well, it's funny. There's a similar sort of dichotomy in the board game industry where the European games are a little more gameplay focused, whereas the they call them Ameritrash games because I guess the game, you know, traditionally the gameplay itself is not as important, but the theme is very heavy, right? So you're in space. Eurotrash exists, I guess.
I think both of them. I think they're taken as tongue in cheek.
Right. Exactly.
I think there's that kind of spirit.
Mm. Okay. Let's talk about legal issues, since, you know, obviously this is a semi-legal podcast. Are there any legal issues that you think about that you've had to deal with in your industry? You don't need to get specific, I guess, with, you know, if you've been sued or anything like that, but just in general, the things that you think about from a legal standpoint? Anybody?
Just how our industry goes, you know, the biggest thing that we are always concerned about is safety for our players and, you know, make sure that everybody, is kept from injury, which, you know, obviously, that'd be really bad if, you know, we're doing something that people are just, you know, falling like snowflakes right and left, you know. We want to keep people safe while they're having fun.
Sure.
It's probably the biggest thing, you know, and so, for I think everybody, you know, like the first thing that you kind of do if you're doing this as a business, obviously, is you're, you know, aiming to protect your players first, from, you know, dangerous things, you know, like, beyond that, you know, you sort of have to try to protect yourself legally in that same vein by, you know, like having a, you know, like the liability waiver,
sure,
you know, that everybody signs. I don't remember ever signing a liability waiver for any other kind of, you know, gaming industry stuff, you know.
Definitely games, when you get a board games. Game, you're not signing a liability waiver.
Definitely not. Right. Actually, I would love to see that board game that makes you sign a liability waiver.
Exactly.
It's the Psycho Circus board game or something. But I think that's probably the biggest legal concern that, you know, any of us have in this industry. Sure. Is it, you know, are people going to have fun and not be doing something that they're going to be injured in?
Right. Well, I think the big legal issue there is negligence, right? So here's
correct.
My lawyer-ness talking.
No, absolutely.
Basically, you have a duty to not be negligent. And if you breach that duty, so a duty, a standard of care that you have to go by. So if you have an escape room with a bunch of nails sticking out of the wall or something like that, you know, something that could obviously hurt someone, and you have a standard where you have to make the room basically reasonably safe for people. Even if you have a liability waiver, you know, you definitely, you know, you're going to put in that they're assuming the risk and they understand that it can be dangerous or what have you, but you know, still, you don't want to tempt fate and have dangerous things and breach those duties that, to your customers.
We don't have nails sticking out of our walls.
Okay, I didn't say you did. You can't speak for other escape rooms, though.
Yes. Right. I mean, you know, I'm not going to name any. I did play a game that had like a giant pane of glass that was just sitting against the wall. Hmm.
Yeah, that seems.
Anyway, it had nothing to do with the game. It was just there because they didn't think to remove it. I mean, that is a possibility, and like,
definitely.
Situation with the waivers and stuff.
Yeah. Forgive that beeping. That's my mother's house. Has a when you open the door, it beeps, and I don't know how to turn it off. So, okay.
I mean, like, I think, like, it's funny though. Like, players come in, they're like, they come in, they're expecting to play a game, they're excited to play something, and then they get really shocked when there's a waiver for our games, anyway.
Yeah. You don't expect that, but.
Why do I need to do this? I'm just playing a game, right?
But do you get customers questioning it? I mean, I signed it. I didn't even really care. I assumed that I'd be waiving any rights. And
I think, strangely, I think people are very people have gotten very risk averse. And so a waiver to them means that, you know, you might get hurt here because like they have to fill it out when they're like, you know, doing things that are oftentimes like more dangerous or even like exercise classes or something. They fill out a waiver and they're like, oh, I could like strain my back here. And so when they see the waiver, like they immediately think like, oh, this may be more than I expected.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it is, because for people who are surprised by that kind of stuff, this kind of activity and this kind of direct interaction is much more than they expect.
When they told my it was my sister and a couple of my cousins and my niece or my two nephews, and when they told them that they were going to get handcuffed as the first thing, they're like, what is this? You know, they freaked out. I said, oh, you know, they're not really gonna, I mean, but they really handcuffed you. I mean, you had a little it was very cool. It was very thematic.
I think for us, people are a little they're surprised that they have to sign a waiver. If they're surprised they have to sign a waiver, it's just because we try to be a little enigmatic about what you're going to be doing. And so sometimes, you know, you people just kind of show up and they're like expecting, I don't know if they're expecting like some sort of Sherlock Holmes, you know, like scavenger hunt.
They didn't think it'd be so physical, I guess.
Yeah, they didn't really, you know, like, I mean, you know, we don't sort of play up any sort of, you know, the physicality of what you're going to be, you know, like when people say, why am I signing a waiver? And I just kind of say, well, we're going to be active. We're going to be out on the streets of San Francisco. This is just a liability waiver. So if you twist if you fall and twist your ankle, you are, you know, acknowledging that, you know, we didn't have anything to do with that, or that you understand that this is going to be a little bit of a dangerous activity, just running around in the streets of a city that doesn't care if you're playing a game or not.
We need to, Shannon, we need to edit your liability waiver to say something like, if you are caught, we will disavow all knowledge of you. Something like that. Yes.
I do that anyway. I just don't tell them.
What I'd like to see is Albert's parkour group doing a Jericho mission where you're parkouring through the streets, and I guess that would give away who you are right away if you're the one, you know, cat jumping and doing whatever.
Gives you access to a new space, though. We can take over the roofs and use that as
I love it. Yes, now we get the rooftop chase, the part of the spy movies that we never get to do. Yeah, people are always joking about, like, is this because I'm going to be rappelling down a building or something like that? I can't do that. No.
Oh, that's the advanced version. You should get on that.
Yeah, hanging from a helicopter and running across the rooftops. I love all that stuff. I just can't do it.
Well, I don't generally deal with local regulations and things like that, but if you had to, have you encountered that in either of your businesses?
I don't know that local regulations really fit any well for what we do.
Right. It's very unique.
Yeah, I tried to do as much homework as I could when I first started, and I got a lot of walking into one office in San Francisco and telling them what I did, and they said, go to that office. And eventually, you know, when I got pointed around in the big circle to come back to where I started, I thought, okay, you know what? I don't think this applies to anything. So, there isn't a lot of, you know, regulations for what we're doing. I mean, any that I know of, we try to make sure that we keep everybody safe, not just from physical injury, but also from, you know, that sort of, I don't even know what how to classify it. It's sort of the post 9/11 paranoia.
Yes, guys taking pictures of bridges and things like that.
Right? people running around with their hands in a satchel, you know, while talking into the radio things about killing people.
Right.
it could potentially be bad if it wasn't for the fact that it's a 47-year-old white woman with a ponytail, and you know she's smiling while she's doing it. So yeah, there aren't any, but you know, as far as local regulations that we are trying to comply with. I don't know that there are too many, if any.
Albert and Kaz, is there something?
Yeah, I guess for like just as a note for your listeners who may be more video game people, there's something that's like very different about doing this kind of experience and running as a business is that we have staff, right? Like, and the staff that we have aren't just like, you know, developers who are under that kind of thing, but we have part-time staff who are running our games who aren't the designers and who aren't like, you know, just doing the building of it.
Yeah.
And once we create it, we have to run this on a day-to-day basis with our staff. So, you know, we have to consider basically what does it mean to run a small business, like a retail store in our case, like we're running out of retail space. We have to know like what the regulations are on like hiring and staffing and all that for like, you know, the data.
It's very true.
Do you have an HR department or anything like that, or somebody that's dealing with that stuff, or do you sort of deal with it as the business owner?
I mean, we're a small company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about Kazu and how we figure that stuff
out. We don't have any like an administration professional.
Okay.
So like we do, or one of our staff do, and then every single time we found any problems that we try to solve. Of course, we have our lawyer and then ask them what to do, what we should do, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah it's important to have some good consultants.
Yeah.
I'd second that. Yeah, I as far as running the business, yeah, there's administrative stuff and I actually I take care of all that stuff, whether it's unemployment insurance and all the other kind of stuff that goes along with having staff. So yeah.
Okay. What corporate forms have you guys chosen? Do you operate under some business entity like that?
Foxhound is an S corp.
Okay. And Scrap, are you like a division of the Japanese?
We started a corporation for Scrap Entertainment in the United States, so it's a separate corporation.
Yeah.
But you know, we're under the Japanese company as well.
Okay, very good. You know, sort of personally, how do your friends and family feel about this? This is sort of an odd career, and whenever I would tell people about who was coming on this podcast episode, they say, what? And a lot of people didn't even, when I was talking about the room escapes with my family, no one had ever heard of it, and they thought it was super weird. So how do your family members and friends, how do they see this? Curious.
My parents, they don't understand still. But yes, they understand that I'm doing what I really like. Right. And then I'm really enjoying. And then they live in Japan. And then in Japan, Scrap is a kind of famous company. And then so they hear,
right. It makes you legitimate, right?
Yeah. I'm alive in the US. So that's it.
That's good. Albert?
Scrap is pretty well known in San Francisco area right now, but it's not well known where my parents are, so I haven't really come out to them yet.
Okay.
I talk to them about it occasionally, but it's so hard to get through. My parents are Chinese, and they know English, but it's hard to kind of get through like the concepts. You know, I like to think about this whole thing like really theoretically and critically as well. And so it's really hard for me to explain to them why I think this is all really important.
Right.
The best that I can come up with is like I'm an artist of sorts, and I don't think they're happy with that. So you know, I tell them I try to just like you know get them to understand that that I'm trying to create experiences, and there are people who enjoy this kind of thing,
right.
And there might be you know like a longer future ahead. I hope so, you know, and you know, I think with any kind of thing that doesn't feel like it's part of the traditional lucrative pathways for family, especially. You just kind of have to hope that they care that you're happy about what you're doing. And yeah. I am, you know, so there's that. Yeah. As far as my friends go, you know, everyone's really supportive. I think like if you are excited about what you're doing, your friends will be, you know, they'll feel that. And the people around you, you know, will understand that it's something that can be really important.
Absolutely. Shannon, I know you have kids. Are kids excited about it?
I have two daughters. They love what I do because they get to play with all the stuff that I yes. sort of work with. So like, you know, I have almost weekly shipments of Nerf guns coming into my house because we use those
right.
in our corporate events. My daughter was running around the other day with one of my laser tag guns. She just got her stormtrooper costume, and so she was wanting to get a laser gun. So yeah, they love it. In general, though, I've got a lot of you know pretty good support from my family. You know, people ask me how's your business going, and I say it's going pretty good. But I'm not buying any Lamborghinis with cash yet,
right.
You know, my wife is a full-time teacher, and so you know that she is the main source of revenue for our house. But you know, that being said, every year we just keep on growing and growing. I think that for us, you know, us three, me and Albert and Kazu, we're in a slightly different place than a lot of other people that we know that do this because we're doing this as our sort of our full-time gig,
mm-hmm.
whereas a lot of other people, you know, they're working at Google in the daytime or, you know, somewhere, and then they just have these fun games that they do, you know, sort of in their off hours. And so a lot of our community, it's almost like a hobby or they love to blow it out into something bigger.
Right.
It's just that, right now they don't have that, but there's a lot of support for guys like us that are, you know, in our community that are doing something because we're sort of blazing the trail on what does it look like to make money doing this stuff. You know, hasn't been a lot of that. For the most part, there's support. You know, I personally get a lot of the spy theme for me makes it a lot cooler than if I was doing something like with, I don't know, superheroes or something.
Okay. Well, no, I think that's there's two main points. One is that I think these issues are very similar to the game industry in general, especially, you know, there's a lot of, we'll call them amateur, I guess, game designers who like to develop games, like to come up with their own ideas, but they don't necessarily want to transition into that as a career. Because honestly, for very few can actually make money at it. You know, you really have to be some of the best of the best. But and I think there's a lot of people who their parents are probably not happy or not, you know, as happy as they could be when they hear that their kid is going to design board games for a living or something like that. So, yep. I mean, it's definitely the issues there are very similar. I know I get it. The same thing. You know, I tell people, they ask me what I do. I say, well, I'm a game lawyer. And people are like, what does that even mean? Like I'm Phoenix Wright or I just play games or something, you know? So, and you definitely don't become a game lawyer who works with independent game developers to, you know, become rich or anything, but you do it because you love it. And I think we all have that in common. You know, that's why we get into this business because we love to do it.
I'm sure you're seeing this, Zach, with a bunch of like indie developers, though. Like, there's a lot of them who are kind of they're not like working at Google and making mm-hmm. these games. They're trying to like there's some struggle with
definitely
these smaller scenes too. And I think it's very similar to like these like what we're doing, you know, is very similar to these scenes that are making kind of genre breaking games and stuff like that, like, you know, the Twine community and these alt games communities that are making weird stuff. It's harder to sell.
I think that's okay. I mean, that's, I don't know. It's difficult to recommend that someone quit their job and try to make an indie, game to sell on Steam. It doesn't really make sense. But, some people need to follow their dreams, and that's it's just, you live your life the way you want to live. I mean, I'm the weirdo that sold everything, and I move around to different countries for a living, and I live out of a backpack while running a law practice. I mean, you couldn't get any more weird than that. But it is what it is. You know, I do what I love, and I've never been happier. So I can't complain. Yep. And I think everyone sees, and probably you guys have the same experience, everyone sees how happy you are and how you are really, you really love your life. I'm assuming that you all love your lives, but,
correct.
Yeah. I think it definitely shows in your work too. You know, you put, So, can we talk a little bit about what is the community like? Shannon had mentioned meetup groups, and you guys have talked about festivals. How is the community growing, and what avenues can you sort of interact with this community? Albert?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's like a lot of people are really new to this this scene. I mean, it's not very big, but the academic scene, I think, has been pushing these kinds of games for a while. You're seeing big game centers like NYU Game Center. They have classes on big games, and you'll see IndieCade has the big game segment, and Come Out and Play has been a big festival. So it's starting to show up. And so there's this community of people who are making these kinds of games. Not all of them are turning them into businesses, and a lot of people are kind of doing them as small art projects, but they tend to be pretty accessible.
Cool.
That's especially as far as the art project thing goes. Here in the U.S., I think it is small. In Europe. Mm-hmm. And some of the places like in UK, the games like what we're doing, sometimes they're sort of art installations, we would have a hard time, doing like a slip and slide down California Street in San Francisco because, we got to get permits and all that stuff. There's places in England where a city has commissioned a company that makes games to do something because they want to promote their city. Right. And so they're going to be on the map for the next 2 weeks because, hey, look, we have a slip and slide going all the way through our village. And, there's a lot of publicly funded sort of games that happen over in Europe because, they're interested in, how they can sort of bring attention to, their city or their arts community or something like that. And so, that doesn't happen as much here with what we do.
I've never heard of it, but that's pretty
cool. It's really interesting. There's a lot more sort of companies that do stuff that, we're doing something for the teenagers in this town by doing a zombie game for the next week or something. And so, that doesn't necessarily, it sort of flip-flops when you get over here to the U.S. where you have, people that are like, hey, it would be cool if we did this. Oh, and now we got to talk to the city council and see if we can convince them that it'd be okay to do that kind of stuff.
Ruining all the fun, as you
know. I maybe it is. Yeah. How Europe approaches, legal, liability lawsuits or something. I don't know about that.
I don't either.
You can definitely see the landscape in Europe for, kind of these live games or urban games or street games or, embodied games, Albert. how they kind of change as you just cross the Atlantic.
Right. Katsu, is there any community in Japan and maybe a community that sort of bridges the gap between America and Japan?
So actually, it's live live game community is bigger in the US, bigger than Japan, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so we are pioneering in Japan. So it's getting popular and getting bigger, but still it's smaller than here.
Okay.
I mean, for the escape games, they've been spreading and kind of like they've been really big in the United States in the past couple of years. You're seeing them in every country or every city, rather. But I wonder, Kazu, what do you think in Japan it has become so popular? Like, because Scrap is gigantic. I mean, like, we have a bunch of room escape games in the United States now popping up, but even with the number that we have, I think Scrap has more in Japan.
Yeah. So I think the basically is so Japanese people are shy.
Okay.
So even they cannot be excited in the street so easily. So right. That's why we but once you have locked in the room, it's a closed space. They can be free. So that's why I think that one of the reasons that real estate game got popular in Japan.
The Japanese audience may have been looking for a designed experience that would give them an excuse to be kind of crazy.
Yeah. But also at the same time, as Sharon said that. So in Japan, we worked with one island for tourist campaign. So we rented out a fort island and make a puzzle hunt, one day puzzle hunt. So the island wanted to have tourists, more tourists.
Right.
That's why we collaborate with the island government.
So, is this more of a tourist, just in general, is it more for locals or is it a tourist attraction there?
Tourists.
Okay.
That one event was a
tourist. Oh, okay. But I mean, just in general, the escape games.
Yeah, 2 weeks event. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But generally, yes, I think escape games are, they're local businesses. Right.
Yes.
So they're for locals.
Yes.
So go on.
Oh, sorry. I just want to expand a little bit. Something I want to mention is that there's something special about live games in that they are this way, in reference to what Kazu was saying about getting kind of permission to do something that you might feel uncomfortable doing otherwise.
Right.
Getting like if Japanese people are shy and they don't really want to, engage with each other that much as out of their own volition, when you give them an opportunity to do so, that kind of says you have to talk to other people and you have to work together. And that's what games can do. And that's what games generally do, especially live games. It gives them the permission to kind of be someone that they might aspire to be, but not be totally ready to assume the form of. And that's the same case with with spy games, with Shannon's game.
Oh, totally. It
gives people an opportunity to be a spy for a day. And really do that within your own body and really feel like, I really was a spy for a day, or I really was a detective.
Right.
I think that's one of the things that makes live games so powerful and why I'm excited about them as well.
Yeah, I don't think the audience is so different here. I think everyone's looking for that excuse to collaborate with people and, really come out of their shell and have a great time. I think even shy people can benefit from that. That's awesome. Or from playing Stranger Danger, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys one thing I meant to ask earlier, but I didn't. How do you deal with repeat customers? How often, let's talk about the room escapes and sort of the static things like that. How often do you change them up, or how often do you have people coming back? I mean, if you've solved it once, I assume, the mystery's sort of gone. So, with the 10% solve rate, I guess that it's going to, do people come back for repeat visits to try again?
No, actually, so we have a walkthrough after each game.
Ah, okay.
So they can't play the game. Right. So we that's why we always say, so you can play our single game only once in your life.
Right.
So that's why we need to keep creating new games.
Right. So how often, what's the timetable from, the idea for the theme to getting it in front of the public? How long does the game design take?
Really depends, but let's say from 3 months to a year.
Okay, wow.
One second, guys.
Sure, no problem. Yes. Shannon, how about you? You had sort of mentioned this with people coming back and they sort of know the techniques.
Door, so
yep.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
No worries. For us, when we get repeat customers, usually they've played once before, but we actually have so we have three different operations. We like to call them operations. That's right. One set of three missions. We have three of them. We just started with one, from there I actually created a night game. So we were doing it all in the daytime. Created a night game just because people kept on asking about, do you do this any other time of day? Mm-hmm. Or honestly, I really needed an excuse to use night vision goggles for our mission. I had them and I needed. And from there, I added another one. And so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 3 days, three different operations or three different, sets of missions. People, even though they ask me all the time that when I only have one, they say, what happens if I come back? And I'd always say, it'll be different. I promise.
Okay.
Because new people, new, the city is just randomizes everything. But, people just say, well, I've done one, let's do the other one. And so I have three. I actually have two more, that are sort of waiting in the wings right now that I'm working on, because I want to sort of retire the older games, bring some new ones in,
sure.
get repeat customers back in.
Right.
The other thing about our repeat customers, sometimes they come with their spouse because it was like a birthday present or a Christmas present or something, and they play with us and then they realize this would be really good for my company. My department.
Yeah.
And so, we get a lot of people that, if they come once, they're going to maybe, pass our name along to the person at their company who, kind of organizes outings, and we'll go into a private event with that company. And we know that one person there that sort of, give us the recommendation. So, for us, repeat customers aren't that big of a deal. I mean, there's two guys that just I think both of them are sort of competing for how many times they've come with us. I think one has eight, the other has seven. I swear we're like the screening service for their dating. They each come back with a new girlfriend each time, and so I think they're like saying if she can handle this, she's worthy of a second date.
Yep.
but they come back, they tell me, gosh, I didn't think it was going to be this hard the next time, because it's just they're playing against a new group of people, or
right.
They're trying a new strategy and that didn't work either. For us, we just welcome them back and say, hey, come on back. We'll play again.
Albert, you stepped away for a second. Did you have anything to say about that?
In terms of repeats, I mean, I think one of the things is right now, these kinds of games, in general are something that's a novelty to people. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something that's going to be part of their daily pattern to play. I mean, sometimes we'll have these mega fans will come back. And for like escape games, we service these customers who are fans by making more games. But in general, I think the general population doesn't really understand these games yet. A lot of people are still kind of surprised that this is like even a thing that people will do. So I think a lot of people are coming in with the sense that this is like they're going to try it out, and I think that's one of the hard parts about this kind of industry is that a lot of people are coming in to like see something novel and then they go back to their regular lives. But at the same time, I think it's really important to give them that opportunity to be someone different for a day. Occasionally we get the fans who come back. Scrap has like a bunch of people who are really into these kinds of games, and I think it's nice because one of the things that allows that to happen for Scrap and Real Escape Games is that the puzzle community has existed for a long time. Before the video game industry
right.
was as big, so we kind of have that crossover between game players and live game players and puzzle people, and that allows us to kind of to work with a larger audience
Yes. Is there anything particular to your advertising or marketing that tries to go for a wider appeal than, say, video gamers or gamers? By using the term game, you're sort of presupposing that someone likes games. But is there something, some words that you use or something that, that tries to cast a wider net?
Immersive is the buzzword these days.
Ah, yes.
And experience, right?
Sure.
Like those are the two words that that make it more accessible to people who don't want to identify themselves with games.
Right. Okay.
I actually started thinking that I should call these spy tours. Mm-hmm. I actually realized that this is a horrible tour. I don't tell you about anything. You don't know anything about San Francisco, like who built what or where you went. And the fact that if you call anything a tour, you have to get a tour guide license. Forget that. So I started calling them adventures. And I don't mention game, I don't think hardly at all. On any of our, any of our communication, any marketing, we don't say game, we say adventure, just because it's that sort of thing. When they went in, sometimes people do show up not knowing they're going to play a game until we tell them. But by that time they're hooked. They already made it. We got them. So for the few that aren't, necessarily inclined to play a game. They end up playing and they really get into it. I've seen very, very, on one hand and count the number of people that did this and at the other end, after they're all done said, this is terrible. I never want to do this again. they always sort of get into it and have fun. So, yeah. We're calling it adventure.
That sounds perfect. Well, Albert.
Yeah. I was saying games and role play are like super powerful, right? It really is transformative when people have an opportunity to play.
Yeah.
Well, this podcast has been an adventure. I guess that's going to wrap this up. I don't want to keep you any longer. So thanks to all three of my guests, Shannon, Albert, and Kazu. Where can our listeners find you again? Shannon.
You can find me on our websites, foxhoundua.com. I also am on Twitter at S. Brazelius. That's all the places I live.
Okay. Albert?
You can find my portfolio at kong.cat. That's a website. And my Twitter handle is at lethalbeef.
Okay. And Kazu?
Yeah, you can find us at VREscapeGame.com, and you can reach me at the Twitter. The name is Kiganjo, KIGANJOU.
Okay, and I will link to all of those. And I urge anyone listening to this, if you're in San Francisco or in New York or any other cities where these games can be found, or is that it? Just San Francisco, New York?
There's got to be more.
No, I'm talking about specifically yours. I'm sure there are more.
Oh, no, not for us.
Okay.
Sorry.
For Real Escape Game, we're in San Jose as well.
Oh, okay, perfect. Yeah, well, if you're in Toronto, wow. So if you're in any of those cities, definitely check them out. I mean, these are experiences. These are, if you think playing a board game is cool, then you got to play one in real life. It's pretty rad.
We are going to open the room in Los Angeles.
So. Oh, okay, wow. All right. So, my L.A. people. Maybe when I'm there. When is that happening, Kazu?
Hopefully August.
Oh, well, then I can go in September. This is exciting. I can see all you guys in August when I'm in San Francisco, and then L.A. in September. That's perfect.
Beautiful.
All right. And me, you can find at GameLawyerBlog.com, and you can check out my game development contract creation site at IndieGenerator.com. So for that site, if you use the coupon code INDIEGEN50OFF, you get 50% off of contracts for the rest of 2015. So give it a try. And thank you to all my guests, and I will see you guys next week.
All right. Thanks,
Zach. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.